morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So when Matt first asked Kelly and I to do this, I was like, oh, he's just asking Kelly to do this. Because most of you know this is really not my scene. And then he said, so 2 years ago we did our financial peace testimony. I'm like, oh, I'm probably good for 10 years. I'm probably exempt 10 years. But here I am 2 years later, so evidently not. But he asked us to share our personal testimony, and I never actually shared mine with anyone, primarily because I didn't really think it was that interesting or profound. So I'm trying to set the bar really low for everyone. And also I'm lucky to have a wife who is very good at sharing, so she picks up my slack, as she does in many areas of our life. So, that being said, I grew up in a small West Texas town of Leveland. I don't know if anyone knows where that is, but it's about 30 miles west of Lubbock. And it was a fairly typical upbringing. My parents were both educators. My dad was an administrator. My mom was a high school Spanish teacher. If you've ever seen King of the Hill, she's Peggy Hill. She has the West Texas accent, you know, in Spanish. And with that being the case, I couldn't get away with anything in high school, obviously, when your parents are both educators. And I had an older sister who was 6 years older than me, and she was like the model of perfection. So again, I couldn't get away with anything. And like most towns in West Texas, church to population ratio is off the charts. So there's like a church in every corner. And my family, we went to First Baptist Church in Leveland. And we were there anytime the door was open. Wednesdays, Sunday morning, Sunday night, potluck dinners, revivals. I mean, we were there all the time. And a couple of things before I get into my story about my parents that kind of really stuck with me my entire life is my mom is like the best example of prayer that I know. She is like the prayer warrior of Leveland, Texas. If anybody needs a prayer, they call Sherry Barsh in Leveland, whether it's the guy, the cotton farmer who needs rain, somebody has a hangnail, they call Sherry Barsh. So they have a landline phone, and growing up, like, our phone would just ring off the hook, people calling Sherry Barsh to pray for them. And then she had they had like a whole call list of, like, she would call this person, and that person would call this person. So it was a game, like, so to pray, and I always imagined it was kind of like a game of telephone. So the guy calls to pray for rain for his crop, and by the time he gets in the line, he probably has a terminal illness. But at least he's getting prayed for, so, yeah. So, but she started a women's prayer group in Leveland at First Baptist 30 years ago, and they still meet today. The same ladies, and but she taught me early on to have that personal, like, not just as, you know, praying in times of need, but to have that personal relationship with God through prayer. And that's something that she taught me. And my dad is not the most vocal guy, but he was always so good about tithing and giving back to the church, and he instilled that in my sister and I. Every Sunday morning it was, do you have your tithe, do you have your offering? And so that's something that stayed with me as well with my kids and the family ministry team here at South Main is tithing, and it's stuck with me. But kind of back to my story, as a kid I loved church because that's all my friends went to church. It was just the thing you did. And I made my profession of faith in fourth grade at Vacation Bible School, which was, you know, kind of a classic small town West Texas move. I remember it being heartfelt. I knew what I was doing, but you also feel that pressure of, you know, it being time. And by the time if I get to sixth or seventh grade, my mom's really going to be praying for me to get this done. So I remember I felt that pressure, but it was also heartfelt. I felt the conviction. Of course, as I got older, we would go to church camps with the youth, and, you know, you do the whole thing where you rededicate your life. You're listening to, like, Stephen Curtis Chapman and Michael W. Smith, and you're doing the motions to the songs. And so it's kind of what you do. And I remember thinking, like, I don't know if this is all necessary, but, you know, I did it. But high school was also around the time I started kind of getting burned out on church. I was playing sports, and we were there every Sunday, every Wednesday, and of course, my friends at that time, a lot of them weren't going to church. They got to watch The Simpsons on Sunday night. And also, by the time I got into high school, I got into fantasy football, which my mom would later deem a false idol. So I would always think, like, man, if I could just sleep in on Sundays, you know, set my lineup, that would be great. Which I never got. I didn't even think of telling my parents I wasn't going to church. But I remember thinking, a couple of years, I'm going to be in college. And I'm going to do what I want to do. So my first week out of the house, I went to Texas Tech, went to Lubbock. And I remember my first Sunday out of the house, I went to Indiana Avenue Baptist Church in Lubbock. And more than anything for me, this was a fact-finding mission. I knew I needed to get secure, like the church bulletin, to figure out who the pastor was, who the music minister was. So when I got quizzed by my mom every week, I would know, all this stuff. Like, so I knew, I was like, I'm probably not going back to this church. So I did that, and and I, like I said, in my new, it would probably be the last time to attend church in Lubbock, because I can sleep in on Sundays, set my lineup for fantasy football. It's going to be great. And I wish I could sit up here and tell you, like, I felt this huge void, but it was pretty great. I really enjoyed it. But the one thing I will say, though, is, like, I went back to my mom and that power of prayer. Like, I never lost that relationship with God through college, and that really helped me get through it, because I would pray every day. I might not go to church, but I would pray, and that was a big thing. Of course, Sherry Barsh was under the impression that I was enjoying Indiana Baptist immensely. I might have mentioned that a few times. It's unfortunate this is being recorded, by the way, because she might listen to this. But two, it's good because I know Eileen and Evan, when they go to college, will not be able to get over on me if they don't attend church. I know all the tricks, so I will know. So I went through college, didn't really go to church, still had a relationship with God because I would, I would pray and that sort of thing. But after college, I moved to Dallas, got a job, I was kind of living the same life. I'd wake up on Sunday, set my lineup, watch football. It was great. But I started to feel like I was missing something. This was in my early 20s, and my parents were convinced I was missing a Christian woman in my life. I wasn't so sure about that. But at 24, I started attending church, like, sporadically. I went to, like, Park Cities in Dallas, not every week, but I was trying to get back into the flow of things. It felt good to get back in the routine, but I still didn't really have a fit or felt like I belonged anywhere. Then at 25, my life really changed, and it turns out my parents were right. Imagine that. I met Kelly, and she'll go into more detail, I think, a little bit about that. But this was the Christian woman my mom had been praying for. And faith and church came up a lot early on in our relationship. I might have exaggerated my church attendance at that time, slightly, but she didn't give me the church bulletin test, so I didn't have to, like, know, like, any of that. But more than anything, this was a woman who made me want to go to church and realize it was actually something I'd been missing and needed back in my life. And so from that point on in 2003, when we met, we got back into going to church every week. Because she was already doing that, so she's another good influence on me. But I'm not going to lie, I have missed pregame football a little bit. And when we pushed back the late service to, like, 12:20, till it ends at 12:20, that did sting a little bit. So some of you this fall that go to the early service, you might see me in the early service a few times this year. But fast forward to moving to Houston and getting married, and South Main becoming a huge part of our lives through Sunday school and the various ministries of the church. It's been awesome. I look out and I see a lot of you. I've teached your 4-year-olds in Sunday school, and, like, seeing them tithe and pray and grow up in the church has been a blessing for me. And 15 years later, we've been married almost 15 years, been part of the church 15 years. I don't think we could have found a better fit for us than this community. And add the fact that we get to raise our two kids, Eileen and Evan, in the church, I consider myself very blessed, and I thank all of you for contributing to my faith journey And it's definitely a journey that's still a work in progress. So thank you.
Just as a preface, I didn't bring any Kleenex, and I have kind of an ugly cry. I'm going to try to make it through because Carrie and I have a standing bet on who will cry first. So, and I didn't at the deacon's meeting, so I'm hoping I can make it through it. So that's kind of a background. When I became a deacon, Nancy said that she would like us to give our testimonies during the deacon's meeting at some point, and so I signed up for what was the last available date to push it back, and I was very fortunate it kept being pushed back, so I actually didn't give it till January, and I was still very nervous and to do that, so I was a little bit more prepared when Matt asked me today, but I'm very proud of Kyle because this was not his comfort place, so I appreciate his vulnerability. But at the time, as I prayed and wrestled trying to figure out what is my testimony, I realized that my mind was always drawn to familiar hymns. Some of you may know this because I share it a lot, but I just love the hymns from my childhood. They're like kind of my cornerstone. I call it like a faith cornerstone, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. And I appreciate the music at South Main immensely. It's opened my eyes to lots of different kinds of music, but I do miss that familiar Southern twang that I grew up with. So thankfully, Alan Jackson put out two gospel CDs called Precious Memories that thankfully for me, so when I do miss them, we play them a lot, and I'm just going to jump ahead to say that Kyle can attest that Evan doesn't do them on his own, but Eileen regularly will have Alexa play Precious Memories. I've taught her that in times of need and in comfort, you know, we can rely on those words that have been written from hymns and from verses in the Bible. And I sent Carrie and Steve a video one time because we still have monitors in the room. And she was conducting like Carrie to the hymn. And she was singing one of the hymns. And I just was like, bawling. And so I text him and I'm like, look at what you've done.
And I was bawling.
Yes. Carrie was like, I'm in the grocery store crying. So anyway, that's kind of the thing. That's kind of the flow of the way I wrote my testimony, was kind of thinking about those hymns that have really shaped my walk with God. I'm starting kind of like with my parents, because I feel like that's, you know, our history is kind of what drives how we've been exposed to the faith, our faith, and that certainly is true in my situation. My parents met and were married here in Houston and given land to build a house on what would become what you all know as Greens Point. It was the only house I ever knew until I moved out for college. My parents both graduated from high school, but neither of them ever considered college. It just wasn't a thing in the family. My mom immediately started working for Exxon at the age of 18 and retired 35 years later. And she's very young, obviously, if she started at 18. But she sort of had to have a forced retirement because her early onset Alzheimer's began at the age of 54. She has now lived with it for over 14 years and no longer knows who I am. Dad, come and carry me. Give me a Kleenex, because I'm not going to make it. Okay. No actual tears have fallen yet, though. She no longer knows who I am, but is still at home being cared for by my father, and occasionally does stay with us. Some of you have met her. When she stays with us, I bring her to church. We don't stay home and hide her. Like, we bring her out and let her be around people. My dad was drafted to serve in Vietnam after high school and then came home to start his first and only job, thank you, at Southwestern Bell. He retired a little over 30 years later as well. And I mentioned their job history because I have to tell you, there was something about my parents never changing where we lived, never changing jobs. They really made it seem as though the life you're born into is the life you just had. Like, it didn't occur to me that other families moved places. It didn't occur to me that people didn't stay married. It didn't occur to me that you ever got a different job. Like, the job you pick is the job you keep. Like, I just, and really, until I went to college, like, I mean, very naive in that way. And not that I didn't have family or friends who were divorced or had moved or anything. It's just, it never occurred to me that was my life. Like, I'm going to get married and have one job and never leave. Like, that's just what you do. Never left, you know. Anyway, I would wrestle with that concept later on when I began questioning things about faith and ideas from the Bible. The hymn, "Wherever He Leads, I'll Go," always brought me comfort that I could make different choices than my parents. But I also feared that, what if I can't always rely on the same house or the same job like my parents did? And that was scary to me. I am the oldest of three spread out children. I'm 5 years older than my first brother, and I'm 10 years older than my oops brother. And it was very clear, thank you. And it was, thank you. It was very clear that he wasn't oops. It was openly talked about in the family. That this was my mom was 37 at the time, and that was not in her plans. My own birth story is one of legend in my family, and supposedly gave them a glimpse into the hot mess I would be in life. According to my parents, I was due on Christmas in 1976, but did not come out until 3 weeks later on January 13th. Which seems really exaggerated now that I've had children. Like, I don't know how that happened, but that was like the story to this day. And apparently, I was not only breech, but my knees were tucked up against me. So, like, imagine the legs of the baby all the way to their back, just all coming out. And apparently, I did lots of physical damage to my mother, and my family claimed I lost oxygen to my brain for a little bit and blamed that on why. My whole growing up, I had uncles who'd be like, well, that's because you lost oxygen to the brain. So, I don't even know if that's possible. Like, I think it's just completely made up at this point. But I was in middle school when the show Seinfeld debuted, and immediately, just a few episodes in, I would get back then phone calls, no technology, but at all our family parties, like, you are Elaine Bennis. You are so Elaine Bennis. Like, that just kind of, that became my persona that they would call me. And as I reminisced on those stories, writing the testimony, honestly, the tune that just really stuck with me was Just As I Am, that was always played at the altar call at the end. But that was the song I thought about because I have I'm a good sport. I can take it, being teased and things like that. But it does hurt sometimes. And so that was kind of one of those that I would always go back to because really, truly knowing that God loves me for who I am. And that's a constant truth I've had to kind of tell myself through the years. I exude a lot of confidence, but very self-conscious about things. So I just always have to remember that. Those words in that song that he loves me for me. Growing up was very normal, or so I thought, as we all do. Kyle, he doesn't think it was normal. Because I thought everyone had a relationship, everyone's parents had a relationship just like mine. On a serious note, my dad was very emotionally abusive, so screaming, name-calling, fear, intimidation, and threats were pretty much the norm. My mom received the brunt of the abuse, but none of us were immune, and it shaped who each of us has become. We all lived in constant flinch mode because surely he really would hit us one of these days is what my brothers and I would always prepare for. But unfortunately for us, actually, he was too wise to leave physical evidence of the pain he invoked. As I've gotten older and wisely sought therapy, I can see the life my dad lived prior to marriage as having a profound impact on how he treated his family, especially the haunting experiences of Vietnam. That said, it's only pushed me harder to be different, to do life different. But even so, I constantly battle self-criticism and the need to seek perfection as best I can with his voice always ringing in my ears. You're not good enough. The hymn, Only Trust Him, provides the words and affirmations on making my way through that time, and knowing one day I'd have the power to make different choices for my own family. My mom was the opposite, perpetually cheerful and happy in every way. And yes, that sounds like Mary Poppins, because that's what she was. She built a fantasy world in her head where she would go to escape the unpleasantness, as we called it. As soon as the emotional abuse passed, she never acknowledged it happened And we knew it was pointless to try and talk to her about our feelings or experiences because she would act like we had made it up. It was like it never happened. If you want to imagine a picture of my mom, though, imagine her singing the hymn Showers of Blessings with a smile on her face. At the same time, while my dad was telling her what an idiot she was, or using more colorful language. That said, she was a wonderful and loving mother who, except when it came to my dad, really did make sure we wanted for nothing, that we were loved by her and God, and always put us first as much as possible. I recognize that even when I felt abandoned by her during my dad's eruptions, the hymn Love Lifted Me is one my mom and I actually sang together a lot, and I bet that she turned to those lyrics as often as I did when we were trying to block it all out. So I would ask, where was God in all this? Well, I'm going to go back further. My mom was born and raised in the Heights by parents who met in Liverpool, England. My papa was stationed there during World War II. They got married there, but he had to come back. And my mamaw came over on the Queen Mary to meet him, where they settled on Idlewild Street in the Heights. Her name was Eileen, and I always knew my daughter would carry her name one day. I just love their story. They raised my mom and her siblings at Emmanuel Baptist Church on Northwood Street, which is still there today. It's a Hispanic congregation, laying the foundation for my faith. So this is one of those faith cornerstones I talked about. I can credit my faith in God today back to those grandparents because it was their service and dedication to Emmanuel Baptist Church that led my mom to make sure we were in church every time the doors were open. I love that church with all my heart and cherish the memories, especially of Vacation Bible School in the summer with my mamaw. And I must admit, the song that came to mind wasn't necessarily a hymn. It is My Country, Tis of Thee, because we sang it for Vacation Bible School right before we said the pledge of the Bible, but also because it's set to the same tune as God Save the Queen. And my grandma always admitted that she sang the lyrics to that under her breath in America every time. And she taught me how to play it on the piano, which I can still do today. I can't play very much, but I can play My Country, Tis of Thee. And I have to do a side note. I did not share this at the deacon's meeting, but I just think it's hilarious. So 6 degrees of separation, you know, the whole Kevin Bacon thing, that's kind of my life. So especially now that I've joined South Main, it's been crazy. So my grandparents were very dear friends of an interim pastor who interimed a lot at Emmanuel, and his name was Reverend Milton Bailey, and his wife Lucille played the piano. And I only learned just this past year when I saw that our pastor, Steve Wells, was going to lead Brother Bailey's memorial service. And so I emailed Steve. I'm like, how do you know him? Because he's from my childhood. And he said, well, his son goes to South Main. I'm like, what? And then, so I was like, and he was like, yeah. So I told Kyle, I said, I have to go to the service. Like, I really feel like I need to go. And I get there, and I walk in the door, and Larry Carroll and Russ Chaddick and Dorothy Chandler and Gail Musgrove over there. I'm like, what are y'all doing here? And Russ was like, well, that Lucille was Ann's oldest sister. I'm like, what? And then, of course, Larry's... In-law, Alicia was a sister, and then and Dorothy Chandler was really good friends with James, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, my mind was blown in the middle of this service. I saw people from Emmanuel that were there that had cared for me in the nursery. Like, it was just the most bizarre experience. Yeah, this was just last year. Was it not the craziest thing? I think y'all were like, what are you doing here? Because there weren't a lot of people my age at the memorial service, I will say that. But just an incredibly small world. But anyway, I digress. My dad was also born in Houston and grew up in Oak Forest. He was not raised in church, and he grew up with a very quick-tempered father and a very, very cold mother, who I later learned had suffered sexual abuse by a family member, which I think led to a lot of that. Would have been nice to know that growing up so I didn't take it personally, but it gave understanding later. He and his sisters lived through things I wasn't always privy to, but I know it wasn't pleasant in general. However, even though he was in church, I have to admit, he got on board when he realized, kind of like Kyle, it was a requirement of marrying my mother. To his credit, he did go to church with us for many years and allowed my mother to take us even when he went through phases of not going himself. I am so grateful the wonderful memories of the two churches we became members of when growing up, and of course they helped form my faith, and I consider those the cornerstones. I must admit that because my parents weren't very political in church or out, it wasn't until I came to South Main Baptist Church that I ever heard of, well, I had heard of it, but I didn't know what the Southern Baptist Convention was. And I didn't know why, I'd never heard of the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. I didn't know why it was formed. And I'm still learning at 42 years old. So every time Steve was having a new members class, I would sign up, even though I've been a member here for a long time. He'd be like, what are you doing? I'm like, I want to learn about what it means to be Baptist. I don't know. I just grew up there. But that said, the lively hymn, "There is Power in the Blood." If y'all know these hymns, I'm sure you can sing these in your head as I'm mentioning them. But those lyrics really capture the feeling of both SBC churches I grew up in, which they did. They taught God's love, but there was a really heavy dose of fire and brimstone on the side for good measure. The first church in my memory after Emmanuel was Gatewood Baptist Church, and the pastor was my Uncle James. He wasn't my real uncle, but that he became my dad's best friend, and I really think that's why my dad actually went to church, because this pastor loved on my dad and became like a brother to him and a family, extended family to us. He became an incredible mentor to my dad, and we became like family. When I was around 7 years old or so, I wanted to be a part of what Uncle James preached about and what I sang about in the lyrics of the hymns each week, especially "Softly and Tenderly Jesus is Calling." Again, that altar call that just tugs you. And my favorite was when we all get to heaven, because you got to shout praise God in the middle of the chorus. I loved it. Still my favorite. I hope Carrie puts it in one day. I don't think it will make it into the big service, but maybe on a Wednesday night. I don't know. But hey, I love Jesus. I wanted him to be in my heart. So of course I wanted to get saved so I could go to heaven too. So I answered an altar call one Sunday night, and that was that. There was no baptistry in the church, so that would have to wait. Clearly, this was a faith cornerstone moment, and at its foundation were the lyrics of those hymns and many more. They are still what I turn to when I'm in need of comfort, but I'm not convinced that at 7 years old I truly knew what it meant to be saved. It's just what everybody did. Very similar. A few years later, although we loved Uncle James dearly, the church didn't have any children. So my parents decided to visit a church our neighbors recommended. It was a church plant that was meeting in a Holiday Inn off I-45 by the Papacitos while they raised money for a building. I will never forget being in third grade, and our first time we visited, I was walked to my Sunday school class, and it was in a hotel room where we all sat on beds and listened to the Bible story. It was so weird. But we loved those people and we stayed. My brother thought it was awesome. Like, we were in hotel rooms. There was a bathroom. You know, we were running around. And I think of the hymn, "Leaning on the Everlasting Arms," when I look back on those years, because those were good people, really good people. And I have to say this side note, because I think there's enough people over a certain age that might remember these, but it was shortly after we joined this church in 86, they started doing a Sunday night video series on the rapture where they showed this movie called A Thief in the Night.
Yes.
I'm seeing some nods. And the sequels over several weeks. Well, those movies scared me to death. I was like 10 years old. And if you've seen them, I can't even believe now my parents let us watch them. Like, I would never let my children sit through that. They were frightening, like horror movies. But this was definitely a turning point in my faith, because it was the first time that fear of hell and rapture, like, the sermons about fire and brimstone, like, had a picture with them now. And I was not doing that. Like, I was not going to have the sign of the beast. Like, I got saved again every Sunday night. I was like, I am not doing that. I mean, it was frightening. And I remember singing, "Are You Washed in the Blood of the Lamb?" And that is literally blood in my head as I think of those lyrics. And but truly, and then on a happy note, it was that "What a Friend We Have in Jesus." Like, oh, I just was like, yes, I'm your friend. I'm going to heaven. And I would just do that over and over. And because I was prone to nightmares growing up. And I'm telling you, there is no story I could have read that would have scared me as much as those movies. Anyway, that was not a good choice on their part. North Park Baptist Church is what we were named. Finally broke ground, and we moved into a pretty building in Spring Humble area with our beloved pastor, John Gross. My mother taught me, she taught Sunday school for little kids and always served the church when asked. While my dad did go to church, he never served on any committees or got involved in any way other than fellowship potlucks on Sunday night or the softball games. He did like to host people at our house, though, and I will say that was a blessing for me, because we had the church over on Sunday nights to eat sandwiches and just hang out all the time, especially in the summers. The best part of the church was the beautiful new baptistry. Since I had never been baptized, I was one of the first people to break it in. But again, I'm still not sure I knew exactly why I was doing it, other than that's just what you did, right? I did know to ask our music minister to let the congregation sing my favorite hymn, Dwelling in Beulah Land. Because again, praise God. While my home life was chaotic when my dad was around, I really truly am grateful for much of my childhood, and it's because of my mom and my church. I had amazing, really amazing middle and high school Sunday school teachers that loved on me and all of us in a way that I needed it the most. They helped me understand that my Father God loved me in a way that my earthly father couldn't, which helped me get through it. They all knew what was going on, but nobody seemed to be able to help. Plus, like Kyle, in a different reason, I knew I would be able to leave as soon as I was 18. Of course, the upbeat and joyful hymn, "I'll Fly Away," that I heard in every funeral we went to growing up, was actually my song of redemption. I was like, I am flying away far from this house as soon as I graduate. The only thorn about my teenage years in church was the constant feeling, again, that I've mentioned, that I didn't get saved for real. And like Kyle, every year at church camp, I would feel convicted, answer an altar call, and rededicate my life again. Hymns like Standing on the Promises were key to reminding myself that God keeps his promise. I wasn't doing it wrong, but it was still exhausting. I did grow out of that, but it's really made me reshape how we talk to our own children about God and how carefully we're introducing the idea of accepting Jesus into their lives at a time when they can understand that decision and not do it just because that's what's expected. When my youngest brother was only 7 years old, I enthusiastically left for Baylor. I was free. Unfortunately, there was no money for college savings and I didn't win any scholarships I applied for. So that's how my journey into crippling debt began. I had to take out loans for 100% of my room, board, and tuition for my years at Baylor. Let that just sink in for a minute. While at Baylor, I never felt led to join another church, so I just went where I felt like going, when I felt like going. I'd be lying if I said I went to church every Sunday. I wasn't perfect.
More than me.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. After 18 years of also going Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and every other activity in between, I just kind of wanted to break from the church as an institution. But I still attended Touchstone, which was a praise and worship at Baylor on a weeknight. I joined Bible studies in the dorms, and I love those Our Daily Bread little things because it was in a small chunk I could digest at night in my dorm room and feel like I was doing good. I used my own money for the first time to buy a Bible at the beginning of my sophomore year that I picked out on my own. And it's a very special memory I have. But even though I was in college, if any of you know me, I'm an early childhood person, it was a Precious Moments children's Bible. And I still have it. I love that Bible. I never had a season where God wasn't in my life or a priority, but I must admit I counted Baylor Chapel as going to church, which if those of you who went to Baylor, chapel is not church, but it's called chapel, so I can't. When I think of in college, the hymn, 'Tis So Sweet to Trust in Jesus, reminds me of how I justified that church didn't have to be in four pretty walls. I could pretty much do church where I needed to do church at the time. And I'm not sure that's always the right message of that song. That's not the message that song was trying to send, but I still love to sing. In May of 2000, and 5 years later, the fun had to come to an end, so I finally graduated begrudgingly with a teaching degree and set off to be a grown-up. My dream of meeting a husband at school and getting married like I felt all my friends were doing was not in the cards, so I decided to be adventurous with my newly broken heart and moved to Dallas on my own, not knowing anyone. My best friend introduced me to just an acquaintance of hers that the only person we each knew in Dallas. I'd met him once. And when I think of all the crazy decisions I made over the first 3 years of graduation, I really honestly can't believe I'm here. It's truly God's calling on my life to a higher purpose and a faith cornerstone. And again, blessed assurance that hymn felt like it was written just for me. And we sang that at our wedding. I made sure that was one of the hymns we sang. My new friend helped me find an apartment in the village, and I found a job teaching pre-K at an elementary school in Pleasant Grove. If any of you are familiar with Dallas, it's south of Oak Cliff, if that gives you any idea of the children I love to serve. This was a Title I school, and my fair skin stuck out like a sore thumb, but I fell in love with that community, and I can proudly say they did fall in love with me, too. Looking back, I should have been more freaked out about the things I witnessed in that time and experienced, But I wasn't. I mean, I grew up in Greens Point. This was kind of like home to me. It all felt very normal since it was normal for my students. For example, there was a rash of burglaries to the school itself, and it never really bothered me, but one day I came in and my classroom had been broken into. We had glass on the doors, so I walked in to teach pre-K and there was glass, little shards of glass over my whole classroom. And I'm trying to, me and my aide are trying to clean it up before the children were arriving, and we weren't doing a very good job or quickly of it. But one of the dads pulled me aside. He goes, Ms. Domino, you don't need to worry. I just want to let you know we got your back. You're cool. Instead of being scared or disturbed by that comment, I threw my arms around him. I hugged him, and I told him that was the nicest thing anybody had ever said to me. And so that was really kind of a faith cornerstone. I had a peace. I really had a peace that this is where God wanted me to be. And while I didn't always feel as peaceful as this hymn might suggest, Amazing Grace was a beloved hymn for that community. And it was for me. I mean, I'd always loved it, but really during that time. I always found myself seeking God throughout the years, so I joined First Baptist Dallas and began tithing my own hard-earned money for the first time. I even found myself waking up early to go to Sunday school for the first time since high school. And while I enjoyed their singles group, no love connections were made. Oddly enough, because of my loneliness, I started saying yes to going out on weekends to bars and clubs with friends I'd made. I'd been too scared of my dad to drink in high school, and it was fairly easy not to drink at Baylor because my friends weren't into that. But now I'm 21 years old, and why not? Only on the weekends, I began drinking, and because I was a novice, I started ending up in very compromising situations with no ability to help myself. This was a faith cornerstone moment that stands out in my mind. It is truly by the grace of God I did not end up assaulted in a car accident, arrested, or dead during that time. I was totally good during the work week, but come Friday night, I would find myself blackout drunk on a fairly regular basis. And again, how I ended up tucked in my bed safely by my friend on a regular basis, I will never know. But while I didn't get sexually assaulted, I didn't get arrested while driving drunk, I didn't wreck my car and kill someone and end my career, I did finally hit rock bottom. When one truly horrifying morning, I woke up in an apartment I didn't recognize, and that was it. I wanted to go home, literally and figuratively. The hymn, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus and How Great Thou Art, take me back to those scary years along with Amazing Grace. After 2.5 years of being there, I was aching to move home to Houston. My experiences had scared me into stopping the clubs, but honestly, being unable to watch Astros games during that time was killing me, and I was lonely and wanting companionship. My memories of my dad's house had become watered down 8 years after being away, and I know it was God that urged my best friend to call me. It was the Christmas of 2002, and she was graduating from law school and had gotten engaged. Her fiancé had a job in New York, and she had a clerkship in Houston, and she said, why don't we move back to Houston together and live together one last time before I get married? So I said, do it, book it. Well, God's funny like that, because my birthday's in January, and on the 26th, a friend was goofing around and did a search on Yahoo Personals posing as me. Only two guys fit my very picky profile, and one of them was Kyle Barsh. Seriously, I cannot make this stuff up. I was scared to death of internet dating. It was so new, and I was convinced he must be a gross old pervert that wanted to chop me up in his basement. But I was lonely. So when we began emailing each other, it was really nice and fun to be flirty again, and I could imagine what he looked like. I didn't know what he looked like. I didn't know anything. We just were emailing. And after a few months of daily emails, I finally agreed to meet him in person, and the rest is history. Unfortunately, I'd already committed to move to Houston, and I was not going to change my mind over a boy I just met. So a faith cornerstone moment in that I prayed and trusted God that if this was meant to be, we would find a way to make it work. With Kyle staying in Dallas, I moved to Houston, and we flew back and forth every 2 weeks for 6 months. During that time, we immediately started visiting churches in Houston. And again, 6 degrees of separation. Another faith cornerstone moment happened when I found South Main. It began with my best friend. Wait, you could do this so much better than me. He can tell this story better than I can. My best friend's mom, who happened to have converted to Episcopalian so she could be a pastor, recommended I try South Main on the recommendation of her colleague, Bob Wells, whose son, she said, had just taken the pastorship at South Main. What are the odds? So in January of 2004, Kyle and I decided it was worth, or well, I started joining the church in 2003 and we were visiting. In January of 2004, Kyle decided I was worth picking up his life for, so he quit his job, moved to Houston, which was shocking and scary to a small town West Texas mom, right, Carolyn?
She was praying a lot at that time.
Yeah, his mom was praying a whole lot. We loved our singles class with Greg Funderburk teaching and Maxine, Betty, and Julian as our community leaders. We joined the church that June, were engaged by that August, and married in the sanctuary a year later in July. And South Main was now our home more than ever. As soon as I got back from my honeymoon, Mike Gray called me and asked me to teach the pre-K class. I wasn't thrilled to do it because I was teaching pre-K full-time in Aldine during then, but I'm a yes person, so I jumped in. And like my mom and grandmother before me, teaching Sunday school brings me purpose and joy every week. It's now been 13 years, and my first class of kiddos graduated in May from South Main. What a gift. Did any of you think of the hymn Precious Memories, too, as you were watching them? This church has literally saved my life in the 15 years we've been blessed to call it home. With our children, Eileen and Evan, and very quickly, I must say, that's a whole nother story, but this church, through Addie Carpenter and Bob Carpenter in a very scary pregnancy, helped get Evan here safely, and I'm so proud of that. I got my master's degree and became a school administrator, and I had a life-changing walk of becoming debt-free with Kyle through financial peace and the Gribbles, through community of making friends and the privilege of being asked to join the staff where I work today. There is joy. And yet, there is also pain. In the fall of 06, my youngest brother realized what we had all known for years, that he was gay. However, my dad lost control that Christmas Eve and attempted to murder my brother with a shotgun and was arrested. This started a 10-year separation where I didn't have any communication with my parents. But Steve Wells in this church walked alongside me those entire 10 years, counseling and comforting us along the way. I gave birth to both my children during that time without my mother by my side, even though she was just across town. Through a combination of her PTSD from enduring years of my dad's controlling abuse and her early onset Alzheimer's, she chose my dad over her children yet again. And the pain of that is still raw to this day. Not only that, but my middle brother started becoming very fundamentalist and legalistic in his faith, and over time cut out my youngest brother from his life too. So in addition to being estranged from our parents, I've been torn between my two brothers for the past 6 years as well. Trying to be the light of God's word to them both and having no idea how to navigate the minefield I find myself in to this very day has been exhausting. My heart grieves that my brothers and their families can't all be together, but I just continue to pray for reconciliation one day for them. In fact, this past July, a few weeks ago, our family took an 11-day road trip traveling to Washington, D.C. to visit one brother's family, driving to Tennessee to visit the other brother's family. And we had a wonderful time, although it was bittersweet to think how much better it could be if we could just all be together. God is a pesky guy. My most recent Faith Cornerstone moment came 2 years ago. I felt the Holy Spirit clearly and persistently calling me to reconnect with my parents. I moved slowly and carefully, and it's been one of the hardest decisions to make. Kyle and I continue to seek Steve's counsel, and while it hasn't been easy or pretty, we've made some small steps forward. When I was approached about the nomination to become a deacon last year, I had never felt so inadequate or as much a fraud as learning people in this church, maybe even in this room, thought that I could be worthy to be among them. I'm a chameleon in that I often exude confidence in my work because it's my passion. But the truth behind the curtain, my own Oz flaw, if you will, is my lack of self-confidence. I know I don't honor God when I criticize myself as one of his children, but I believe that is why he led me to this church, this particular faith, to this team as a volunteer first and now as an employee. The staff and leaders of this church, the parents of the children I love so dearly in Sunday school, my peers in our adult Sunday school community, the intergenerational friendships I covet and seek out in this very room, you sustain me and help me live out my faith to honor God by healing those wounds. You are my testimony when I see myself reflected back in your eyes. Through your friendship, your hellos, and your hugs, you, South Main, are my safe place to fall, and I'm honored to be among you. As I close, I keep coming back to the hymn, The Old Rugged Cross, because that's the picture of peace
and where all my faithful cornerstones come back to. Thank you.
Thank you, Kyle and Kelly. We have just a few minutes left, so be thinking of questions that you might have for Kyle or Kelly, and I can run a microphone around if you come up with something. Kyle, favorite NFL team?
It's gotten to the point where, like, it's whoever's on my fantasy team. So,
but you love the Cowboys growing up.
Yeah, I like the Cowboys growing up, but I know I like the Texans. So, but yeah,
he's a Texan.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Great.
I've adopted the Houston team. So.
Yes, he has.
Kelly, tell us what you do on staff.
I am the child care coordinator and play days parent liaison. So currently, I hire and staff all of the paid child care workers on the preschool hallway. I do their scheduling and payroll. And adopted that from Susan Moore, who did it beautifully for 17 years, and those were very big shoes to fill, by the way. That was difficult, but I enjoyed doing that. And then if you don't know, we have a little Mother's Day Out program on Tuesday, Thursdays, where the workers work as well. I work with Carol Williams managing that.
Kelly now manages twice the number of child care workers that we had when I had that job. She is phenomenal. Any questions for Kyle and Kelly?
All right. Thank you, guys.
Kyle, talk a little, just another second about FPU.
Okay.
How did y'all get involved? And
yeah, so we got involved shortly after we were married, because as Kelly mentioned, like her Baylor debt became my Baylor debt. So
that's a lot of debt.
Yeah, so... But Kelly was kind of spearheaded that for us. But I think we did the FPU talk 2 years ago, but we were 100, how much in debt were we?
$150,000.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that does not include a mortgage. We were living in an apartment.
So yeah, we buckled down, and it took us how long?
4 years and 6 months.
Yeah. But we did it, and I mean, we have Gribbles, Steve Rader to thank. Been great just living that journey and then helping others through that journey as well. I would encourage anybody who hasn't been through FPU to do it, because it changed our life and changed our kids' lives, and it was great.
Do you want to tell a funny story about how you found South Main?
Well, that was pretty, I mean, okay, this is the one she's talking about, I think. So I did find South Main through my friend's mom, but once we got here, Kyle and I watched a really awful reality show called For the Love or Money.
Yeah.
And the person who was in the show was Rob Campos. The Campos' son. But we didn't know that. And we're sitting in church, and we look over, and I went, that's Rob Campos. And he goes, no, it's not. And I'm like, it looks just like him. So we were, the whole service, I'd hear one thing. Steve said, Kyle and I were right back and forth. And we just couldn't stop looking. We're like, and I was like, so we followed him out of church. And Steve Wells had to be like, hey, Rob, good to see you. And we're like, oh, my God. So we came to church every Sunday looking for Rob Campos. Yes, you did. You liked it, too. And they just learned of that story at the deacon's meeting when Wade Klein told it.
What language do you use and should we use as we are interacting with our children to help with this, I don't feel like I got saved for real. You know, when I accepted Jesus, when I learned about Jesus, talk to us a minute about that.
Can we take that one? Kyle and I have talked a lot about this. I will say that our church does a phenomenal job. I have to give credit to Dolores and Steve. They do a lot of what Steve calls this, where we want to welcome their questions and we never want to stifle that curiosity when they're interested, but we want to give them some breaks to think about along the way. Dolores and Steve talk to them, which is great, but as a parent, Eileen has started asking about this a few years ago. She does go to a vacation Bible school that is very Southern Baptist Convention driven, which is all about altar calls in elementary school, and they do that at the and I know that, but I let her go anyway because I love it and I think it's great for her. But we have a conversation. We, you know, I tell her that, you know, I'm honest. I said, Daddy and I both got saved around your age, but we never felt confident in it because we had not had time to ask all the questions to make the faith our own. So that's how I tell her, I said, you know, I just, and we'd have this conversation all the time, because like her friends will get baptized, and she's like, well, I want to do that too, and I'm like, I'm sure you do. We can go to the swimming pool and we can practice. Like, I tell her, I said, when you are ready, you need to go ask Miss Dolores to talk with her about it. And I feel like if she's brave enough to ask that conversation herself, it can kind of go from there. I never told her no. I don't say that she can't do anything she wants to do, but I am very honest. I said, Baptist is not a faith. Like, I mean, it's a faith, but it's like, there's many religions. Our faith is Christianity. We're called to be Christians. And so I want you to learn about the different ways of worship. I want you to ask questions. I want you to understand what it means. I want you to ask Daddy and I questions. I want you to ask, you know, I just want you to have time to explore what faith means and know what you're doing. So she came home from vacation Bible school this year, and she had signed one of those profession of faith cards, and she goes, look, I can get baptized now. And I said, okay. I said, well, why don't you go let Miss Dolores and Pastor Steve know that you'd like to talk to them? Well, she hasn't done it yet, so that's a sign she's not ready. But I don't think there's an age, and I do think it's very possible to get saved at a young age and it stick. I just know based on our experiences, that was kind of what was missing, just that open dialogue about you shouldn't be in your faith because your parents brought you into it. It should be your own. It should be your faith because you choose to be part of the family of God. So, don't know if that's right or not, but
Maggie, you have a question.
Well, it's not a question, it's a comment. We can see, you know, the wonderful things you do with your children, but the one I want to share is the year Henry passed away, Eileen was in our Sunday school class, and Eileen wrote me a letter about how much she loved you and the activities that we've done in the class. And I just appreciate that so much.
It's very special to us, Maggie. Thank you for that.
Kelly may not brag on their class, Kyle and Kelly both, so I will do it for them. They write cards to church members all the time. And Kelly is constantly asking for this list or that list so the children can participate in writing notes to folks. And, very important, a wonderful part of their teaching. Anything else you want to know about the Barshes?
Where was their first meeting spot? We were emailing each other.
We went to On the Border in Dallas downtown, and then I took her
fancy
to a Stars game, hockey game. I got platinum seats, so she thought I was rich.
Well, can I just say, this is at the beginning of like that eBay stuff, which I had never heard of. I'm very technology
totally,
behind
like,
the times. So I thought he was this super rich guy with these seats, and I was like, oh my gosh, I landed a big one. and he has like utilities, but I thought the date went great. And we had met there, because again, it's like, there's no, I don't own a cell phone. My friends were like, you can't meet this guy. You have to drive yourself. He could kill you. You know, I still thought he might be a murderer on the side. So we met. We drove. And then at the end of the night, I thought, oh, this went so great. So I went to just hug him. And he stuck out his hand and shook my hand and left. And I thought, oh, I thought this went so well. And I still to this day don't know, why did you do that? Why did you shake my hand?
I was being a gentleman.
I'm still like, why didn't you give me a hug or something? Like, I'm so embarrassed. I know. Oh, is it right? Yes.
I hope my daughter's first date goes the same way.
That's true. Amen. That's true. Sherry Barsh raised him well.
All right. We need to get to worship. And so thank you very much, Kyle and Kelly.